living a movie, not living by rules. It's just a movie, don't lose your cool.
Hey, welcome to another episode of Spoiled Movie Reviews on the Blackout Tips Premium Podcast Network. I'm your host, Rod. Today, I have a very special guest that I'm joined by. This man actually helped us start the Blackout Tips Spoiled Movie Reviews. He was, I believe, our second guest ever. He reviewed Oblivion with us May 13, 2013. It's my man Russell Hangline from the Long and Late Movie Show. He's also from, for y'all that like college basketball, 2.1 Seconds to Madness. You might know him from there, where he co-hosts with K-Bads and my man Basa from the Firestarter Podcast, friends of the show. But what's going on, Russ?
You know, at times like this, Rod, it's important to ask yourself, WWDARD. What would Donk and Revis do?
Yeah, I believe that those guys would go all in, man, like they did with life all the time. The movie we're reviewing here, first of all, let's talk about spoiler reviews. It's very simple what we do here, guys, okay? This is for people who've seen the movie, who never plan on seeing the movie, or just don't give a fuck because we spoil everything, okay? I guess for this movie, there's really not much to spoil, but,
you know what you're getting, right?
Yeah. Like, I wish there was a thing where I could be like, it was surprise. Oh, I'll give you it. The Twisted Chasers, they live. So there you go.
There's a spoiler. Into the Storm is probably the most clear spoiler title that, there's been since the Channing Tatum Terrence Howard movie Fighting.
Yes.
You know what's happening in the movie. It's right there in the title. They go into the storm.
Yeah, at one point, when I was live tweeting it, I just sent a all caps lock tweet of, oh, shit, they're going into the storm. Like, they're not going to run away anymore, guys.
This was one of the rare occasions, and it was such a treat, that I happened upon Rod Live Tweets, your Twitter handle, right at the beginning as you were like starting to watch Into the Storm. And I wasn't really doing much that day, so I just left my little window open right there and watched your live tweet full experience of Into the Storm, because really it's such a singular experience that I wanted to be able to witness someone else feeling the beauty and majesty of Into the Storm the same way that I did.
Yeah, it's one of the first, one of the most enjoyable live tweets I've done this year. Maybe second only to Noah. I gotta say, man, we're gonna talk about what we liked about the movie, what we didn't like about the movie. Then we're gonna rate it on the More Epic Than Love Jones scale from 0 to 5. And, the basic plot is, in the span of a single day, the town of Silverton is ravaged by an unprecedented onslaught of tornadoes. The entire town is at the mercy of the erratic and deadly cyclones, even as storm trackers predict the worst is yet to come. Most people seek shelter, while others run towards the vortex, testing how far a storm chaser will go for that once-in-a-lifetime shot.
Was that like the press release, or did you just hit that off the top?
No. That's the press release from the
National. I was about to say, my God, that was impressive.
Directed by Stephen Quayle, written by John Swetnam, and starring Richard Armitage. Let's get into, this is a very weird mix of things where I want to say what worked for the film first. And then we'll talk about what didn't work on the back end. Normally I do it the opposite, but I feel like some of these are going to confuse the listener because they're the same for me.
Where right. I'm like, there's going to be overlap.
Yeah. No. So I'll start with you first, Russ, man. Give me something that worked for the film for you, man.
Well, first of all, before I even begin, I want to point out that also that came out that weekend, Step Up All In, the fifth in the Step Up franchise,
yes,
also written by John Swetnam. So he had a great weekend of very, very silly and surprisingly enjoyable feature films. I think the thing that is most enjoyable, first, the thing that is, in my opinion, not debatable, the actual storm itself in regards to the effects, the computer effects, the sound effects in particular, it makes you feel like you're there in a way that really, now granted, Twister was a long time ago, so it's really unfair to compare, but, you know, these effects really make you feel the experience, and the characters, let's just go ahead and say we're not necessarily very emotionally attached to the characters, but you're still sitting there sort of gripping your armrest despite not really caring in that way. And I think that's a very, very huge compliment to the effects team and what they pulled off with the storm itself.
Yes. These are the best storms ever. It's not even close. Like, by the time that last big ass, like, super duper, like, it's basically a hurricane on land. By the time that shit hits, like, I was so lean forward in my seat. You know, I had put the popcorn down, put the soda to the side, like, all in. So, these storm effects were ridiculous, to a point where, they were so dramatically over the top that they didn't make physical sense. Like, anytime a storm hit a building, the building disintegrated. Like, that was pretty much every building was just like, oh no, wind, and just fucking just like went up into the air and disappeared forever.
Right. Yeah. And what's funny is, so I did a little reading afterwards, because if there's one thing that Into the Storm inspires, it's great intellectual thought.
Mm-hmm.
So, afterwards I went and sort of looked up, okay, was this possible? Was this possible? And these sorts of things with the actual storms themselves. And a lot of the things that they did in this movie were at least rooted in reality, in terms of the sheer size of the storm. Things like fire tornadoes have happened. That is a totally real phenomenon. It's a rare phenomenon, but real.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's basically like they took things that you could actually find in reality and then put them on the screen in a way that would maximize the suspense.
Well,
which is perfect.
There's a moment where they take like four 18-wheelers and just throw them into a storm, and they all go off the ground, like to never be seen again. And at that point, if you're checked out of the movie, that's your fault. Like, you know what I mean? Like they follow a pacing in this movie where each storm is more ridiculous than the next. By the time you get there, like, I would have been let down if I didn't see seven 18-wheelers swirling around in this fucking storm, dog. Like, if it wouldn't have picked up like a dump truck and slung it across a football field, I would have been let down. So I don't know how anybody could be like, you know, that just wasn't real. Like, I was done with real quite a ways into this film.
Right. Let's talk about, before we get off reality, one of the best and sort of most baffling shots in the movie, which is sort of where the good and the bad start to overlap, which is the big shot of the airport. Now, let's establish the fact that we're in a small town in the middle of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
And this is an airport that seemingly has, you know, some international, like, airlines.
Yeah.
You know, because these planes are pretty large. None of the characters are going to an airport, have referenced an airport, are passing an airport. There is no reference to the airport. And also, the film is under the illusion of being found footage, of being shot by characters that are there always.
Mm-hmm.
What this movie does, what the director does, which I kind of love, is the director just said, you know what, like, fuck it.
Right.
Like, let's pull back. It's not like there's a helicopter flying that then we cut up to the helicopter's footage and see them. No, they don't even bother with that. They just cut to a shot in the middle of the air of a tornado blasting through a giant airport, And then the tornado is there like 5 seconds later at this paper mill or whatever, you know, like there or wherever, the storm drain.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes no sense, but they were so committed to being like, we need to show the scale of the storm. Nobody cares about the found footage. Nobody cares there's not an airport with international flights in Silverton. Nobody cares that the airport doesn't matter at all.
Yeah.
Nobody cares about any of it. We want to see the scope and the spectacle, and it works.
There were also no human beings at the airport. Like,
it
just tore up big-ass 747s, threw them in the air, and were like, see, this is what will happen, guys. That might be that may have topped Amazing Spider-Man 2 for most irrelevant airport footage to a plot. Like, I didn't think we'd see something top that in 2014,
That's the most irrelevant anything that I've seen in years in a movie.
Yeah.
The only difference is that I really kind of liked it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a movie that's not trying to be much, you know? So it's like, you know, and I think everyone in the theater had the same reaction, which is, oh, that's the airport from the trailer. And then, that was
right,
it.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. The thing I was going to say, man, one of my favorite, parts of this is, my man Matt Walsh, who, plays Pete. You need a good scumbag redemption type story in these, movies. Pete just wanted that perfect shot of the storm so he can make his documentary. And, he was, you know, talking people into basically putting their lives on the line for, storm. He was wrong as shit the whole movie. He was second guessing, Allison,
the
whole time, was a scientist that he paid to predict storms who did turn out to be right. He's just like a complete irredeemable douchebag until the very end where he finally gets his perfect shot at the top of the eye of the storm, at the top of the storm, and dies. But yeah, that dude stole the show, man. He was great.
Yeah, how hard were you like applauding when they set up at the very beginning where they're like, well, all of the storm chasers are going to Riverside, but I say we go to Silverton. And Matt Walsh is going, "How? If you do this, you're fired. If we don't get the shot that we want and they all get theirs, then you're just sitting there going like, oh, yes, yes,
dude,
it's coming to Silverton, yes.
The second where he basically told her to pack up her her playbook and get the hell out of the facility, you know, where he's just.
And then the hailstones start dropping.
The size of golf balls, like literally that second. They didn't even like wait till they got down the street or any. It was just immediately like, kid, that's it. You're done. You're not going with us. We're going to see if we can drive to Riverton and maybe, I mean, to, Riverdale or wherever.
And go
get the rest of the storm.
I think when those hailstones started dropping, I think they waited roughly 5 seconds until some character said, "This is only the beginning."
Yeah, they really
were. We got all of the lines that you want in a movie like this. They're all here, every last one of them.
Anything else that worked for you, man, you want to bring up?
Man, I mean, so I guess we can just let it sort of bleed into what doesn't work,
which
is that the characters are archetypes to, you know, one could argue to a fault, but I think there is some joy in the fullness of the commitment to the simplicity of the plot and of the characters. Like, you've got the dad who's concerned about the kid. You've got the kid who's trapped because he was chasing the girl that he likes. You know, you've got the younger brother who just wants to make a difference. You've got the comedic relief. You know, you've got all of the tinker toy basic skeleton characters, and they don't work hard at developing them at all. And that makes it, for some people, I can imagine people being furious. And you know what? Like, I'm not going to sit here and be like, you're wrong, because I can't justify how undercooked these characters are. And yet at the same time, there's something so fascinating about a movie that commits 100% to just how undercooked the characters are, that it makes the movie intriguing on a level of like, wow, they are committing to this. And this exclusively, it's so single-minded of a film that it's kind of fascinating and an anomaly in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, well, you know, like there's certain things. It reminds me a lot of not the movie, but the idea behind Cabin in the Woods, where it was like, you're basically going to sacrifice these movie people to the gods of death for the audience, you know, for the audience's enjoyment. And it felt a lot like that. Like, we don't really need to tell you a lot about these characters because in the end, it's just people that are, you know, they're like toys to be played with for the audience to go, oh, well, are they going to die or are they not going to die, you know? And I think they do a good job of that. And they try to, like, throw some stuff in there. Like, I love that Richard Armitage's character is like a single dad who's a widower who has two sons, but he's distant with them. And, like, I love that they forced that narration in there. Because
he dropped the line, like, can we not do this today, please?
Yes. And because of the found footage angle of it, all of the dialogue is extremely forced because people don't talk like that in front of cameras. You know what I mean? Like, if you just put a camera in my house, you would rarely catch me going, well, you know, since Susan died, me and the boys have been distant. You know, like, you wouldn't catch that conversation on the way to school every day. But
you've been watching her from a distance for 3 years. It's about time you man up and ask her out.
Right. This is gonna be so good, you know. I enjoyed it anyway. And the found footage angle, speaking of things that didn't work, it does get stretched at a couple of times and then completely broken. But
yeah, oh, it's totally broken in many, many places.
But I don't care. Like, it's just one of those moments where you're like, you know, it was cute what you guys tried to do, but I didn't give a fuck anyway. So, you know, the more
isn't that weird that you didn't care, though? Like, I feel like I've seen found footage movies where the break from found footage or the stretching of the reality of it does irritate me.
Right.
But for whatever reason, this movie that just absolutely couldn't give less of a fuck and throws it in our faces willingly.
Yeah.
We just, for whatever reason, and I've been trying to find out exactly why this movie, for whatever reason, makes me enjoy it. Maybe I'm just a weather movie guy. I like a good weather movie.
Well, I think it is I personally think that because of the scope of what they were trying to do, there's this idea in the movie that it's all about bigger and bigger scale. And at some point you just, I think your mind just is resigned to the fact that found footage can't handle the scale of what they want to show. And I think when they broke it, it's almost like the audience, it's like I willed it to break. Like fuck this found footage shit, man. Show me a big ass storm. And when it started doing that, I was actually kind of hype, like, yes, like, good, we can stop worrying about the found footage aspect and start showing some special effects, as opposed to a lot of films where found footage is so central to what they're trying to show. When they break it, you're like, oh, well, what a terrible cop out. They couldn't find a better way to show that.
Right. It's kind of in this the same way that in District 9, when they essentially switch so that you can see the action more fully, you know, and you get to see the guns exploding and, you know, the stuff blowing up. You need that. You know, you want that, and you don't want that to be just captured on some shitty camcorder. You know, you want to have the cinematic experience. Like, I almost think that the scope, when you talk about the scope, maybe the scope of this in terms of the story, maybe I forgive it because the story scope is so narrow. Like, it literally only has one thing it wants to do: storm.
Yeah.
They don't care about, you know, they're not trying to make any grand statement until the very end when the guy says every day is a gift, you know?
Yeah.
You know, you got like that line in there. But like, they're not trying to do anything other than show us what it's like to be in a storm, to go into the storm. And so maybe it works because of its just total simplicity. I don't know.
I think the music worked for it too.
Music's also good.
It was really good. Yeah, I was surprisingly drawn in by the music, and, you know, the sound effects, for the storms and everything. Like, you know, it really did feel dramatic, considering I have very little attachment to the characters because they're all archetypes. But, when it was time for the storms to come, like, it felt like, how the fuck are they going to survive this one? So that was actually kind of dope.
I also think the movie did a good job not killing off characters superfluously.
Yes.
Like, they didn't kill off, because at a certain point, killing off characters in a movie like this becomes cruel, and it become, and then the movie becomes, like, overly serious.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie knew which characters precisely it needed to kill off, or at least sort of eject from the movie. And it knew which characters we would just sort of inherently want to live. Like, we don't want the sons of this kid, of this guy, to die, because then the whole movie's gonna be, you know, outside of our own basic humanity, the whole movie's just gonna be this guy suffering because his child died. And, you know, like, there are certain characters you just don't want to die for that reason. And this movie does a good job not killing off any of those characters. It kills off just enough.
Yeah, it kills off, when it killed off my man Jacob, the
Peter Pan.
Yeah, my man, he was told, he wanted to quit and go home, and he basically got told to man up, and I was really surprised, because, like, the brother told him to man up, too, and I was like, that, like, after watching The Strain this season, I've become accustomed to a certain level of minority realism in horror that hasn't been shown on screen before. So,
right.
So I was like, there's no way this brother's gonna stay. He's gonna be the one to go.
Right.
Leslie, and he was the one like, nah, let's stay and film these fucking storms. I was like, all right, well, that's different.
But what's great about him is how he just leaves the movie without really any explanation. He says, I'm gonna go tell Jacob's family what happened. But, like, doesn't Jacob live somewhere other than Silverton? Like, you know, is he driving a car somewhere else? Is he renting a car in the middle of this storm?
Right.
I mean, like, is he making a phone call? I mean, if so, why can't he come back and continue to... He was so all about getting the shot, and then all of a sudden he's like, nah, I think I'm going to leave. You know, it seemed like it just got a little too real for him.
I think that was his, they got snakes out there this big moment.
Yeah.
When he saw Jacob die.
Yeah, I really wish they could have saved, you know, the one, like, F word and had just his character go, look, fuck this, I'm out.
Yes, if Daryl,
I'm out.
If Daryl would have said fuck this and threw his camera down, that would have, I actually would have had to give this movie a perfect score. that would have redeemed any possible complaint.
Just walking out, like, you know, kicking the pews of that church, going like, you white people in your goddamn weather, Jesus. And I don't know what the fuck you people are doing, Jesus Christ.
Right. I'm from Detroit. I'm, you know, something like that. Man, the other
a scientist,
thing.
What am I doing out here?
Well, the other thing that was really, kind of forced in this joint, the maturity of the high schoolers, like, whoever wrote them just took no time to think about, like, what high school is really like. Cause these kids were so deep and reflective and introspective and, like, you know, like, fully, they were, like, in a way that as raw as the characters were written, as far as, like, not really being full characters, they were also fully self-aware, which was, like, an odd contrast. It's like they were looking directly in the camera, like there's a moment where the smart son, I think he's Donnie, I think, looks directly into the camera.
Who knows what his name is?
Yes, I think he's Donnie. It's either Donnie or Trey. And he looks into the camera. He says some shit like, when I first started these journals, it was about our future. Well, now I don't have one.
Yeah. That was that whole bit there was pretty rough, you know. And the daughter, like, doing the confessional too, you know, like, maybe I never told you I loved you enough, you know, like all that sort of shit. But I did like, in the same way that after the storms, they took the archetypes that they showed at the beginning in the high school doing their time capsule shit, and then their advice at the end was sort of equal. So, like, the guy who said every day is a gift that I sort of made fun of, he was the douchebag at the beginning, like, man, I'm going to go to college and get so laid. You know, like, stuff like that. And then at the end, he looks up at the camera and he's like, you know, I was excited about college, but now I'm just excited about today because, like, every day's a gift, you know? And I was like, you know what? That would be what a douchebag would say. Like, that fits. You know,
yes.
Like, and the little time capsules at the beginning, they were just – the only thing they were away from was, like, you know, when the bully, like, slams the dork, was, like, yelling out some, like, slur of some sort, being like, stop being gay! That would have made it the quintessential high school experience. That's what high school is actually like. Instead, they probably were just like, you nerd!
Oh, man. So good. So good. Even, like, the hot chick turns out to be super deep and kind of into the kid that's a nerd. Like, such good stuff.
Let me ask you this. Did you think, as I did, so the reason why Donnie, let's assume it's Donnie, Donnie and the girl go to the paper mill is because she, as we all know, when you submit college applications, you need to make a video about something important that is happening in your town. And so she decides she is going to cover the chemical spills within the paper mill that are, you know, ravaging the town's water supply or whatever, right?
Right.
So this is important for her to get into college, and her college application is due tomorrow. Her hard drive broke, whatever, whatever.
Right.
So they go there. Donnie's going to shoot it for her, and they're sort of doing footage, I guess, reporting. We don't even really see much of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then some shit falls on them, and water starts pouring in. Did you think that the chemicals were going to come into play?
I did, and I thought they wasted an opportunity. Like,
so did I. I was so waiting for, like, stay away from the water, Donnie. You know, it's chemically polluted. You know, like that sort of thing.
I'll actually give them credit for something else, though. They did take it to that level where, for a second, I thought they were going to kill one of those kids.
Yes,
I didn't. When I walked into the theater, I did not see that happening. And especially after about 60 minutes of watching the movie, I was definitely like, oh, no. Everyone's safe. But they took that shit to, like, the hilt of, like, this dude's going to lose his son, and this movie's going to no longer be fun. And I was like, fuck, man. And they did a good job with that scene.
So, yeah, I agree. Until the point where he started doing CPR, in which you knew he was coming back.
Right, obviously. Well, movie CPR.
He took off his jacket and he loosened his tie, you know.
movie CPR is the best shit ever, because not only do you come back to life, you never have brain damage, and you always come back 100% ready to do whatever physically you need to do. So, like, the kid comes back from dead, and he's immediately, like, up running to the car, like, jumping in the van, fighting the storms, like, that. Amazing. Amazing.
Right. What's your favorite dialogue that the guy who does CPR on the person says in movies like this?
Normally, give him some room. Give him some room to breathe. I need some air. Move. Like, I love that. Because as someone who's got CPR training, you almost always want two to three people working on someone. You know, you never want to try to do it by yourself.
I'm torn between the prerequisite, come on, damn it.
Yes, yes.
You know, that's usually a good one. Or I think maybe my personal favorite would be, not today.
Oh, yeah. Don't give up on me. Yeah, or even better, if they've lost someone earlier and they're like, not another one. Like,
or if they ever utter like the, you've got to want it, Donnie.
Yeah. Donnie, what about your mother, Donnie? Breathe, damn it.
I want to live.
Yes, I love that. Especially the pound on their chest, which is not helping. The, you know, like chest compressions. Right. You do like chest compressions, couple breaths, chest compressions, is not breathing, pound on the chest. Like, that's, I'm sure that's not in the manual, dude. yeah, man, I liked all that stuff. I didn't like, and this is a personal preference, I did not like the Scott Lawrence as the black principal. Cause he felt like he was doing a really bad Barack Obama impression to me. I was not feeling that shit at all, man.
We're staying in the school. This is the storm shelter. It's like if they've got these giant tornadoes that presumably like are around, they're in the tornado alley. Mm-hmm. You'd think that the town shelter would be underground and maybe not in a like giant aluminum building,
right?
No, like everyone was so confused when they were like, this storm is going to tear through this school. And they were like, no, it's not. It's the storm shelter.
Right.
And don't you understand? This is the shelter. It's like, that doesn't fucking matter. It's an above ground building with doors. You know what I mean? Like,
right. And it's and the tornado is definitely headed this way. Like, it doesn't matter what the training said. And, you know, and also the guy who shows up is like, yeah, I just saved my son. And everybody's going to die because that storm's way bigger than y'all think.
And she dropped the line from the trailer that I love. Like, this is the biggest storm that has ever been.
Yeah. Oh, man. Another thing that didn't work. Her and her little side plot with her daughter.
Oh, yeah. Like, obviously very silly.
And the reason it doesn't work for me is only because her job seems so fucking stupid. Like, it was like, I mean, not that she wasn't good at her job, not that it couldn't have been important down the line or something, but there's like this understood basis of the plot, which is that tracking storms is somehow really, really important. We just don't get it. Like, they don't have time to explain it to us.
Right.
But take the
shot that he gets is going to save lives. Like, how? You can't just say that.
Right. Like,
not a fucking doctor. It's a video.
Like, at least with Twister, they had those balls they needed to shoot into there.
Yeah,
and like,
can shit. Yeah.
Yeah, they needed to track the shit. But with this shit, they were just like, trust us, guys. We don't want, it's a whole science thing. And we're doing science here. There's like times where she like runs into the back of the van, gets on a laptop, and she's sciencing. And
yeah. I wish they would have said that at some point in the movie. Like, not now, I'm doing science.
Yeah. Can't you see I'm sciencing? Damn. The storm is to the left, to the left.
Trust me. Yeah. I have been sciencing for a long time.
Like, the one storm in the beginning where they like show, like, it's the introduction to the van and how badass it is. And they like drive right into the path of the storm, and they like put down the ramparts or whatever, supposed to plant the thing into the ground. And they're like, then the storm like just takes a sudden turn and they miss it. They don't get to be in the storm. And I kept being like, but what would it have mattered if you got into the storm or not? You know what I mean? Like, I don't get right. What, like, at that point, they hadn't established why it was so important to be in the storm and take a picture as opposed to on the outside of it taking a picture.
And how about the anchors on their vehicle that went like 6 inches into the ground and were like totally fucking worthless by the end of the movie?
Yeah. They did not.
It's like, let me inject these 6-inch anchors into some sloshy wet mud. That's going to hold this down. You know,
yeah.
It's tossed airplanes like they're fucking toys, but boy, these 6-inch anchors, you know.
Oh, man. By the way, Matt Walsh's death, one of the best movie deaths of all time.
It was a very, very good movie death. The peace that he achieved right before his death point. And I sort of hoped secretly that he was going to live in the same way. But then they gave me the Donk and Revis reveal, which made up for the fact that Matt Walsh had not. By the way, have we not talked about Donk and Revis at all?
I literally just wrote down the Twister Hunters while you were talking.
Yeah, Donk and Revis, for those of you that don't know, are two rednecks who live in Silverton, and they are planning on becoming YouTube millionaires, which, if you weren't sure this movie was written in 2008, there's your like number one clue, right? Mm-hmm. So there's that like a 5-minute scene at the beginning where they're planning on jumping an above ground pool in a John Deere tractor, and that's how they're going to become millionaires, is doing this.
Yes.
And they then want to be tornado hunters, and the real tornado hunters are like, oh, these fucking assholes, you know, how dare they try and do this? And we think they die, but then they are shown like comically hanging from like their underwear, like in the trees at the very end of the movie. And the movie ends on a great gag where he like plummets to the ground and goes like, oh shoot, and then like falls to the ground with a flop. And that's the end of the movie, is Donk and Revis.
Yes. Donk and Revis are the best, dog.
If this is Shakespeare, they are our clown characters. They are, you know, Sir Toby Belch and Andrew Aguecheek.
They're like a redneck version of the dudes who keep doing that new selfie KFC commercial. So for you guys, that might be a deep cut, but if you guys watch that KFC commercial, you know exactly what I'm talking about.
There were some people, because I was interested, because I knew it was going to happen, and I was also just searching for every Donk and Revis related tweet that entire weekend, as I am wont to do. There were some people who were like, you know, the depiction of people who live in that area was so offensive.
What?
they were offended by Donk and Revis. Donk and Revis aren't trying to hurt anybody. Donk and Revis are just some good, simple folk, man, just trying to become YouTube millionaires like all the rest of us.
Having some fun, man. I really don't understand how anybody could be mad at the Twista Hunters. Those dudes, and Twista Hunters as TWISTAHUNTAZ.
Yeah, there was like a little urban hip hop flair, that they gave to it, which is very strange considering how like unrepentantly rednecky they were.
Yeah, I was kind of waiting for them to drop something racist and they didn't. I was like, oh, you know what? I kind of like these guys.
Yeah, be like, what are you doing with that camera, boy?
Right. I waited the whole movie for them to like have a moment of like, oh, that's right. They're probably racist. And they didn't. And I was like, you know what? I'm glad they live, man.
Or if they see Daryl and they're like, a black person? I've never seen one of those before.
Right.
that's peculiar.
You let him hold the camera, you know. But yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Oh, my name is Dong.
Oh man. So I think we've picked all the meat off of this bone, man. Yeah.
Agreed.
So let's review this thing. Rate it. I mean, from 0 to 5. 0 being, man, fuck you. 5 being the fuck you waiting for. Go see this shit. What would you give it?
You know, to be like slightly serious for mm-hmm. just a second, I probably, to be realistic to your listeners, I mean, obviously, if you're listening and you think this is your type of movie, then you know what it is. And if you doesn't, then you obviously know what it is. So to like play the cards sort of evenly, I would have probably given it a 3, the $5 AMC Before Noon special matinee. But you know what? At a time right now, and again, I swear to God, I'm being serious. Mm-hmm. When everything on the news really just pisses me the fuck off. And like any time I look through Twitter or turn on the TV, I am furious about everything. And like constant, like it's day ruining level fury at the stuff that's going on in Missouri right now. A movie that is so joyously stupid that, you know, refuses to make you think. But at the same time, it's not overreaching its, you know, bounds. It's not. Something trying to be too big, but so its dumbness hurts it. Its dumbness is an asset. And so you go in and you turn your brain off for like 85 minutes and you forget how fucked up things are today for a brief period of time before going back outside looking at your phone and being like, oh yeah, they're fucking busting out riot gear. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm going to go ahead and bump it up right today to a 4 full price opening weekend score. Because that's how I felt when I was leaving, and that's how I still feel today.
And I'm going to have to echo those sentiments. One, because not just because of life, but like movies themselves have gotten so serious at this point. Like there's been some really fun movies this summer, and I've really enjoyed this summer way more than I expected to last year. If you would have told me I was going to enjoy this summer of movies this much, I would have told you you were probably, you know, full of shit last year. But between right. Guardians of the Galaxy, which I had a really fun time at, Into the Storm has been a really fun time. I think that people can, you know, escape kind of through these movies. And more importantly, this is a movie that they don't have many of these a year, but you need to see in a theater. You know, like normally there's, you know, there's some movies that are, even though they're quote unquote bad, if you see it on Netflix, you're going to just be like, oh, this is irredeemably bad. Why did they make this fucking movie? Like, I guarantee you that I'm going to, in 6 months or whatever, this is on Netflix or whatever it's
it won't
on.
Be the same.
Yeah, and people are gonna be hitting me on Twitter like, hey man, you recommended this fucking movie as a 4 and I saw it and it's a fucking 1 at best. It's terrible. Yeah, cause you saw it on a 42-inch screen. I sat in the front row of an empty theater and felt like the storm was coming into my face, dog. You know, pause. But I was like 100% like, yo, this shit is gonna, like collapse this building, because it was the effects and the sound was just so overwhelming. And I feel like everybody who is gonna see it should see it that way,
or just don't worry about seeing it, because it's not really going to translate well to your screen at home.
I mean, unless you've got an insane system.
Yeah. I can't remember if I saw this in 3D, but I want to say I did. But
I didn't see it in 3D. I was very upset. So in LA, they've got, you know, the rumble seats where you can go, and they timed the seats so that, and like if there's water being splashed, and they'll like spray mist on you and like, you know, all this stuff. But they weren't doing it for Into the Storm. They were doing it for some other bullshit. Was it Ninja Turtles? It might have been. Was that the same weekend?
I think so.
Yeah, so it might have been. They might have Ninja. Like, nobody wants to see fucking Ninja Turtles with the rumble seat. Yeah. They want to sit in the fucking storm.
Yeah, dog. That's a huge miscalculation.
That was a letdown. I don't blame Into the Storm for that, though. Yeah. That was. And you know I like a good serious movie, too. It's not like I'm fine with summer entertainment being, like, gravely serious. I'm personally somebody who does not mind, but when escapism is as simple and pleasurable as this was, you know, it's like cotton candy, you know what I mean? Where it's like, you may not feel full afterwards, but you're like, God, that tasted good.
Right. Yep. I agree, dog. They definitely... They fucked up if you can't watch this at the rumble seats with the water, dog.
Didn't they, though?
Damn. Man, that kind of bummed me out.
Hopefully one day rumble seats will be, like, more popular, and they can sort of, like, do specialty houses where they, like, have special screenings of movies that they know will be great for the rumble seats. And maybe they'll, like, sort of retroactively go back and Into the Storm it up.
Yeah, and then we can get Twister. And
yeah, it's just Day After Tomorrow. Like, yeah. The cold can, like, blast you in the face. You know?
Shit. Titanic would be good.
2012. Mm-hmm. There's all sorts of good ones.
Yeah,
there's all sorts of good ones. Weather movies. Weather movies, always great. Yep. Always great.
Yep. You can never say you didn't know what to expect, man. So, I would also give this thing a four price opening weekend. I think it's made about $31.5 million in the box office. So not a ton of money. So if you want to go help this out, I would love to see Into the Storm 2, Back Into the Storm. That would be awesome.
Restorm.
Yeah. Dude, what the hell could they do to top this? I'm thinking an electricity storm.
Well, they tried that with that Emil Hirsch movie a couple years back. You remember that? The Darkest Hour?
Yeah. Oh, I do remember that. Yeah.
Yeah, that didn't work out too well.
Yeah. I was just thinking, like, it picks up a converter or something. I wasn't thinking... Yeah, you're right. That wouldn't work.
I'll work on Into the Storm too. I'll write a spec for that and shop it around.
Yeah. Back Into the Storm. The Return to the Storm. Some shit like that. And also, Glenn, this movie has, the same amount of, for a disaster film, it has the same exact amount of Godzilla in the first 90 minutes as Godzilla. So, make sure you guys check it out.
I saw that tweet. That was funny. I
like
that.
All right, man. Well, make sure you check out Russ's podcast. Like I said, he has two of them, 2.1 Seconds to Madness for you guys that are college basketball fans, and Long and Late Movie Show, which is a really great show, informative and fun. And last time I was on, I played The Gross Is Right for Shira, and she got cheated out of one, but she should have got them both.
That's all right. I gave her back one on the newest episode because I thought I had won, and so I yelled at Leighton about the results, and then it turned out that Shira had somehow slipped herself into position to win. So I'd like to think that it's back even now. Okay. After Rodgate.
This is a very scandalous episode. We'll be back with more reviews, for Spore Movie Reviews soon. So thanks for listening to the Blackout Tips Premium Podcast Network. Peace.
Get your act together. My life's a movie. I leave you in that act forever.
My life's like a movie. My life's like a movie. My life's like a movie.